Killer Innovations Podcast for Sunday, July 24th, 2005. Show number 20, brought to you from Washington, D.C. Hello, this is Phil McKinney, and welcome to this week's podcast. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the opinions and information expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. I've been in D.C. All this week, which is kind of a unique experience. For those of you who are regular listeners of the podcast, know that I'm typically on the road 90 or 95% of the time, but I'm actually home this week, and I'm home next week. And just to give you the irony of that, the rest of my family is gone next week. They had other plans, given that I was supposed to be out of town, so I find myself home in Washington, D.C., by myself. So I guess that's payback for all my travel. Well, can you believe it? It's show number 20. I don't think I've had predicted hitting 20 so quickly. Thinking back, the first show was March 22nd. Recorded that from Arizona, and that's what started this all off. And now we're at show 20. And for those of you who are new listeners, I do apologize, because that means you have roughly 10 hours of listening from the previous podcast to kind of get caught up on all the topics and items that that we've covered. Thanks for all the comments that have come in. It's the feedback and comments that really do mean so much to me, and continue to provide that motivation, hearing the value that you, the listeners, get from this podcast. So again, thank you for those comments. Since the launch of the Killer Innovation Community site last week, and for those of you, again, who are new, this site allows you, the listeners, to come together as a community. A community that's interested in creativity and innovation. There have been a number of listeners who have been viewing the postings on the site. There have been a few who've actually added their own comments. I would want to encourage all of you as listeners to contribute comments or even create your own topics of interest on the site. To get to it, just go to killerinnovations.com and then click on the KI Community button. On the right-hand side of the screen, it'll take you. Keep in mind that this is still on a test server, so the URL is kind of long, and the URL will eventually change once all the servers are consolidated, but I wanted to get that up, and we announced that in last week's show, getting a lot of interest and a lot of participation from the standpoint of viewing, but I want to encourage all of you to actively participate, contribute your own ideas. I really do want to create this as a community, not just just another venue for you to kind of see what my thoughts are. I'm interested in hearing what your thoughts are. Please continue to send your feedback, questions, suggested topics for future shows, any comments you might have to podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can also call the feedback line at 1-703-636-4460. Or you can also reach me on Skype at Phil_McKinney. And here's a challenge. I've had the voicemail feedback line up now for the last 3 months. And I think to date I've had one message left on the feedback line. So this is a challenge. Call the feedback line. Leave me a comment. I'll play them at the end of the podcast. For those of you who are into podcasting, you can also put a little plug in for your own podcast. But feel free to call the feedback line, 703-636-4460. For those of you calling outside the U.S., that's a plus one number. Okay, let's go on into segment number one. And today we're going to talk about the innovation success rate. For those of you who haven't seen it yet, check out the August 1st issue of Business Week. It's a special edition issue on innovation. It just seems like everyone is jumping in on the, quote, importance of innovation bandwagon. There's been a number of books. I just picked up a new one called Fast Innovation, which I've just started to read. But the number of books and publications that are coming out on innovation is becoming staggering. So I think it's kind of the hot thing this year. But again, it isn't just what people can read or write, it's how you apply it. But one area of particular interest in this issue of Business Week is what they report as is the innovation success rate. And they actually break it out by product segment. I thought it was kind of interesting. So I'm going to run through this list. Again, this is from the August 1st issue of Business Week. But they're saying that the success rate for such product segments as, let's say, toys is about 1%. Groceries is 2%. Music, 2%. Mobile phones, 3%. Financial services, 3%. Computer hardware and computer software each at about 4%. Pharmaceuticals at 7.5%. And venture capital firms at 31%. I'm not quite sure I believe the VC number. I think that's kind of an arbitrary number simply by the rules of total monies returned, not the actual success of a given idea, given that VCs typically operate on a 1 out of 10 strategy. But we all know in our hearts, given those of us that are in the field of trying to come up with new products, new ideas, and new technologies, but we all know in our heart that the success rates are really unacceptably low. Think about it. A 2% success rate in music, 4% in computer hardware and software, all the ideas and innovations that are out there that truly become successful, that is just unbelievably low. And that's really the challenge for all of us, including you. Because if you're listening to this podcast, you obviously have a strong interest in becoming more creative or more innovative yourselves, or helping your business or companies, or trying to come up with that breakout idea that you have that's going to change the marketplace. So that's the challenge for all of us is how do we change or how do we improve the innovation success rate? Now, the article goes on to claim that by putting methodologies and metrics in place, that you can improve the success rate by a factor. Yes, they say a factor of 10 to 20. Now, as we shared in some of the previous podcasts, I think it was what June, the June 14th and June 21st show, we shared that you can significantly improve your success rate by having a structured innovation process. And this is in contrast rather than to the haphazard, hope for luck approach that most companies have for the innovation. However, I do have one area, I wouldn't say criticism, I would say of concern about the article, is how they measure success rate. Is it from raw ideas to commercial success? Or is it from first proof of concept to commercial launch? The article doesn't detail this out. And this raises one of the concerns I have when it comes to measuring and reporting innovation metrics. Depending on what you can measure, you can present whatever results you want. You can make yourself look like you have an unbelievable success rate, or if you're trying to encourage your management team, you can make the metrics put pressure on management by pointing out how low your success rate really is. But what we need for this new and emerging, quote, innovation economy, which is what we're seeing emerge. We're kind of coming out of this knowledge economy, particularly with all the outsourcing that is going on, technical skills being commoditized out. We're going into what some people refer to as the innovation economy. Others may call it the creativity economy. What we need are well-defined and adopted definitions for core metrics. There's no universal way to measure. We've spent years in the IT field talking about, the mythical man month and how do you measure productivity of software engineers, etc. What we're missing is fundamental metrics and definitions of those metrics for this new economy. If we have these, then companies, industries, and even countries can truly compare their results on a level playing field and wish to compare themselves. and everybody's in the process of trying to compare themselves that, you know, we're better than somebody else, we have a better innovation process, whatever the case might be. So over the next few days, I will post some initial thoughts and links on metrics onto the Killer Innovation Community site. And what I would ask is that you join in and add your input. So again, here in segment one, I think we all recognize is that the innovation success rate numbers, particularly the ones that are shown in this Business Week article, and I'll put a link up to the actual Business Week article so that you can see it online. But the innovation success rate is abysmal. It's terrible. And we are at the early stage of this new innovation economy to where all of us that have a passion, that have an interest, whether or not you're skilled in it, believe me, there aren't people who've got PhDs in this space, albeit some would claim so. You know, this is a new emerging area, and you have an opportunity, we all have an opportunity to shape the direction and what this industry becomes as far as a regular practice, a skill set, capabilities. So again, one of the things that I'm putting out there as a challenge for all of us is to come together around a set of definitions around the key metrics so that when someone talks about innovation success rate, everybody understands and can use that as true comparisons. Because once you have those metrics in place, then you can, with an unbiased view, identify the best practices, the best approaches that you can then apply to your own business rather than using arbitrary numbers. Okay? With that, we're going to move into segment two. Now, normally in segment two, we talk about weak signals, but as you know, over the last five podcasts, we've been alternating between weak signals and examples. So in podcast number 20, we are going to continue on with this alternating and actually talk about a specific example of applying innovation to the launch and creation of an entirely new business, and in many cases, some innovations that have had long-ranging impact. So here, in this case, in segment number two, we're going to talk about Leon. Like many entrepreneurs, Leon's early business pursuits were less than stellar, like all of us. He had attempted everything from selling soap to working in a creamery. In 1911, while managing his brother's retail store, Leon came upon a solution to a personal need. And this is one of the key areas for all of us in the innovation space, is finding that if you can solve your own need, that you will typically find the market for that same need. In this case, as an avid outdoorsman, Leon was tired of getting his feet wet while hunting. In a flash of inspiration, he hit upon the notion of sewing lightweight leather uppers to the rubber bottoms of ordinary galoshes. Now, galoshes, I think, is going to be pretty much of an American term, but you may refer to them in Britain as rubbers, rubber boots, whatever you would wear out in the normal rain. He literally would cut the bottoms off of the rubber boots, the galoshes, and sew them to the leather uppers. You know, not being much of a craftsman, Leon had a local cobbler make him a pair of boots based on his design. And he actually put them on and he went out and tested them to see how they worked out. He went out into the local woods, he tested them, and the shoes kept his feet so dry that he was convinced that he had a hit. And he had 100 pairs made and sold them through the mail. In Leon's first flyer, he may have overstated the quality of the boots. Although all 100 pairs sold, the shoes turned out to be a flop. The stitching that held the leather tops pulled out of the soft rubber soles. And almost as quickly as the shoes had sold, 90 out of the 100 shoes were returned. Now, many would have considered this an utter disaster and just thrown up their hands and walked away. But for Leon, it turned out to be a watershed event. He promptly refunded everybody's money. But he didn't stop there. Undaunted, And non-discouraged by this initial failure, he convinced U.S. Rubber, who was his supplier, to mold a heavier bottom that would hold the stitching. Then replaced each defective pair with a new improved version free of charge. And by doing this, he turned 90 angry customers into 90 potential customers impressed with his honesty. And with a new and improved product to sell, Leon sent out more flyers, and once again the orders poured in. And inspired by this success that he was seeing, Leon extended his product line to include other types of camping gear. A true hands-on entrepreneur, Leon personally tested every product he sold. It was said that Leon would regularly sneak out of the office to test the latest product. Leon never intended to become a mail order giant. All he wanted to do, and what started this whole process, was that he wanted to keep his feet dry. Leonwood Bean went on to create one of the world's leading international mail order companies. L.L. Bean boasts sales of more than $1 billion per year, U.S., serving a customer base of more than 4.5 million. Now, even with the ongoing progress and growing competition and additions to the product line, one thing has never changed, and that's the L.L. Bean unconditional guarantee. And that guarantee was born out of the initial failure of the first 100 shoes, where he not only gave the people the money back, but he repaired it and returned the product no charge. At any time, for any reason, customers can return any L.L. Bean product for a replacement or full refund, and it truly was and still is a full refund. Now, unlike the experience that a lot of us have with catalogs or online websites today, which typically refund the product price but not the shipping and handling charges, which is kind of one of those little hidden gotchas, L.L. Bean provides a full refund. He was insistent on this. He seemed to instinctively know that what he was selling was not really the product, but it was an absolute unqualified reliability and his 100% satisfaction guarantee. As satisfied customers shared with their friends stories about Bean fixing such things as the tips of fishing rods broken off in car doors, resoling camp shoes, or replacing that compass that got smashed during the rafting trip, all free of charge, the company gained priceless word-of-mouth advertising, and even to this day, a customer base whose loyalty borders on fanaticism. This dedication to customer satisfaction shows that Leon was not afraid to attack the industry norms. And one of the killer questions that I think applies here to what L.L. Bean was really doing in the early days was answering the question, what are the unshakable beliefs in my industry? You know, the mail order industry was very early in those days. The retail industry was typically mom and pops. And what L.L. Bean was willing to do was to say, I'm not going to even think about what the rules apply in the industries today. I'm going to go off and I'm going to establish my own rules. I am going to break the rules and establish a new kind of relationship with my customers. And as a result, the loyalty of the L.L. Bean customers is second to none. One of a number of key innovations that Bean introduced was customer segmentation. To sell the newly improved boot, Bean leveraged his retail experience. In this case, he knew that out-of-towners who came to hunt and fish were very wary about showing up with the wrong equipment. To identify this customer segment, Bean put together a mailing list of people who held non-resident hunting licenses and sent out flyers advertising his new boots. Now keep in mind that this was in the early 1900s. This isn't, you know, the year 2000 with all of our databases. This was in the early 1900s, going out and identifying that segment. And what did he do? He answered really what I would call the killer question of finding out who is passionate about your product or something it relates to. And in this case, L.L. Bean went out and clearly identified customers who were passionate, in this case, hunting and fishing. And then I figured out a way to identify that segment and be able to get to that segment to sell the product and service that he had, in this case, the new and improved boots. Another key innovation was his passion for prototyping. As mentioned earlier, Bean personally tested and approved every product before it was sold to a customer. It's this linkage between knowing the customer, in this case his retail experience, etc., being a passionate outdoorsman himself, and the 100% satisfaction guarantee that had his name on it that drove Bean to test himself. And if he felt that he would use the product himself, then he had confidence that his customers would like it also. And in this case, Bean was trying to address what I would call the killer question of, do current products perform inconsistently? In this case, he was trying to solve getting his feet constantly being wet. So in this case, the boots of the day were unable to satisfy his own personal demand, his own demand for having dry feet, and therefore that drove him to go off and create his own idea and therefore be able to have a product that customers who are outdoorsmen like himself would be willing to purchase. Now, for those of us who take advantages of the 24/7 economy today by visiting stores at all hours, we can thank Bean for this also. In 1951, weary of constantly being awakened at his home and asked to open his store late at night by outdoorsmen who were driving through and needed supplies, Bean announced that he was throwing away the keys and would keep his store open and staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And in fact, one of the only times since then that the store has actually closed was February 5th, 1967, the day of L.L. Bean's funeral. Now, Bean's passion to meet the spoken and unspoken needs of his customers led him to answer the question of who does not use my product because it's inaccessible at certain times and places. And with answering this question and opening his store 7, 24, 365, Bean was able to serve his customers when they needed to be served, not when it was convenient for him to have his store open. And hopefully you found the history and look at L.L. Bean as giving you a little bit of a different view rather than talking about technology or media, but talking about retail in this case and what L.L. Bean was able to do in the early 1900s and also some of the innovations that we've seen recently with Amazon and eBay and others. There's plenty of innovative opportunities still available in the retail space, and hopefully this will give you some ideas. And now moving on to segment number 3, the killer question of the week. In this week's killer question, the question is what external jolts have the potential to significantly impact my industry? Again, what external jolts have the potential to significantly impact my industry? Now, for those of us who come from high tech, or in my case, I have with a background in telecommunications, one of the things that I think in the telecommunications space that got missed, particularly here in the U.S. market, was really the understanding of wireless impact on local long distance. I think similarly, you could look at the online business, such as Amazon's impact on traditional bookstores. But it's not always about technology. There are a lot of external jolts that really have the impact to completely change the industry. And when you're thinking about this question, it's really not about trying to identify the jolt, but then trying to understand what are all the possible outcomes of the jolt that's going to have this impact on the industry, and therefore what ideas get generated that you could leverage to your advantage. So when we talk about jolts, what are some other areas that are outside of the technology space? One is regulatory. Now, regulatory is, in many cases, a bad term. We tend to view it as negative, meaning the government gets involved. But one of the words of caution here is that with regulatory, you can either be proactive or reactive. Proactive is that you're actively engaged in the regulatory process and you actually have the opportunity to influence. Now, in many cases, if you're in a small business, you think, oh, what influence can I have? You would be amazed. You would be amazed at how few people actually get involved in the regulatory process in whatever industry it is and what kind of influence you can have. Reactive is that the regulatory decision has already been made, and now you're trying to find the ways to either work within the bounds or find the loopholes to work around it. Another impact that you should think about is economic. And economic is an area of arbitrage. So, for instance, people who quickly figured out the arbitrage game around labor rates for software developers and who first pushed for offshore work in India, China, Eastern Europe, etc. And it's interesting that more and more outsourcing actually is going away from India and going, for instance, to China and Eastern Europe, where the labor rates are actually even cheaper than India. So to be able to look at and see what are the economic trends on a worldwide basis and what does that really mean for the inflow or outflow of technology, expertise, supply parts, whatever the case might be. The third area of potential jolts or impacts would be culture. Now, culture can be viewed as being, for instance, trying to find the next fad or trying to look at pop culture and be able to gain your share of the revenue that's spent on the whole pop culture phase. The other is trying to create pop culture. And there are a number of companies out there trying to do that. But again, culture becoming an area that could potentially have a significant impact. I mean, one way to look at this also is the renewance of Converse All-Star tennis shoes. Now, for those of us that are in my age categories, that are in the mid to late 40s, you quickly figure out, or you recognize here recently, the resurgence of Converse All-Star tennis shoes, which were the same tennis shoes that I wore in grade school, and now all of a sudden they've come back. And that has a huge impact when you think about suppliers of those kinds of things that now all of a sudden get picked up as a pop item, and all of a sudden they resurge the business and rejuvenate the business and has all that positive impact. Another area for jolts that could impact your industry is demographics. You know, what are the shifting demographics? If you've been on the Killer Innovations community site, you've seen a posting from me with regards to the aging of the population. And this was actually a topic on a previous podcast with regards to the issues of baby boomers and who best then to create or innovate or come up with the ideas for new products and services for the aging baby boomers, but the aging baby boomers themselves. So the issues of understanding demographics, not just, you know, demographics within the country, but another area to look at is immigration. What is the flow of people on a worldwide scale? What countries are seeing outflows of people? What countries are seeing inflows of people? And what does that mean from the standpoint of your business? If you look at certain market segments, particularly here in the U.S., where you're seeing a huge influx of Spanish-speaking immigrants coming in, and the changes that are occurring here in the U.S. market, where you're seeing many bilingual menus, bilingual signs, etc., in order to accommodate the influx of these people. So what does that mean for your business, and what kind of jolt does that cause for you? And with that, we're coming right up on 30 minutes, so I want to thank you for listening. Please keep the feedback coming. Again, you can email me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. The voicemail feedback line is +1-703-636-4460. Or you can reach me on Skype at phil_mckinney. Also, don't forget to visit Podcast Alley to provide feedback on your favorite podcasts, The votes and comments on those sites are really the easiest way for you to say thanks for the time and effort that goes into researching and producing your favorite podcasts. Also, I want to ask for your help as a listener base. I am looking for somebody, firm or whatever, to reach out to me about designing a logo for the Killer Innovations podcast and potentially design work for the Killer Innovations website. I've been talking to a number of firms but haven't been able to really get one engaged. So I'm looking for either recommendations if you've had people that have done good work. Also, this would be an excellent opportunity for students, etc., interns looking to create something that they can put into their portfolio. So if you know of somebody, please feel free to give them my email address, and I would appreciate that. Also, please join in on the conversation about creativity, innovation, ideas, weak signals by visiting the killerinnovations.com site and clicking on the Killer Innovations community button. It'll appear on the right-hand side. So again, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.